Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00011. Recorded on January 18, 2023. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. Peeping Tom. Peeping Tom. Chapter 11.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
In a prior episode of Post Harlan Monologics, no sooner than I express my desire to keep a contiguous flow of thought through the monologue as I go, I went off on a tangent. I just went off on a tangent. Now, fortunately, I was able to reel it in and pull it back together and get it back on track. But yeah, it's just amazing. I literally had that thought in mind while I went off on a tangent. And it's easy to do. Yeah, it's very easy to do. When you're just speaking out, topics just pop up, you know, stories start reeling through. You know, when I tell a story, and I do a lot of storytelling in the process of these monologues, elements of every story is going to have come with an invitation to go off on a different direction for one way or another, or for one reason or another. And a lot of times that reason is simply just to try to explain, right? The difficulty here, especially with this project, right? This is the Overnightscape Underground project, which is an internet radio archive that is speaking primarily to people way out in the future. So when I go at it with that in mind, I have to imagine who the audience is. Now, there's a lot of things in contemporary Texas, in America, and the world as a whole, that are going to be very, contemporary. I look out, like there's a Burger King out there, right? There's a Burger King. 100 years from now, people are not going to know what a Burger King is. So to talk about it as if, you know, it's... And it's a really hard call. It's a really hard call when I might ought to kind of step off aside on a little tangent and try to explain something in a little bit greater depth, right? While at the same time trying to stay on a linear track, a train of thought, as I refer to it. So there's difficulty involved with the work that I do here as a commentator on the world as it is, and you know, and I remember back in the early 2000s, I worked in corporate America, right? Did office work with the cubicles and everything, you know. And we would have staff meetings. And I remember the project manager would come up. I was working up in New Jersey at the time. Our project manager was down in Atlanta. He would fly up like on a monthly basis and just kind of go over everything. And he would frequently use this phrase that I, up to that point, had never heard before. The phrase is scope creep, right? Two words, scope creep. And it's more or less referring to sort of what I'm talking about, right? In a monologue as I speak, when I go off on a tangent, I start to explore topics that really weren't part of the plan to begin with. The scope creep is a little bit more oriented to projects as a whole, project management, right? And to define it, I guess, and I'm going to pull it right off of the World Wide Web here, scope creep. Continuous or uncontrolled growth in a project's scope at any point after the project begins. Scope creep in project management refers to changes, continuous or uncontrolled growth in a project's scope at any point, like I just said, after the project begins. And this is what I want to bring emphasis to here. This can occur when the scope of a project is not properly defined, documented, or controlled. And it usually ends up with negative connotations, right? And I guess, you know, if you can imagine how you have a project, it's defined as it's defined, and in business, it's budgeted accordingly. And when you have scope creep, you start going off in a different direction that you weren't intended to. Guess what? The budget wasn't accounting for that. And now you start to see this basic, simple way that things get fucked up, right? So scope creep, and was this phrase that this guy, he didn't coin the phrase, obviously. It's just, he was a project manager. He came from project management world. And for some reason, up to that point in my life, I had just not been familiar with that particular term. The concept, hell yeah, it happened all the time. But to call it scope creep, it was new to me back then. New to me, and he's a good guy too. We were buddies. I ended up moving down to Atlanta, and we worked on the same floor on different projects. We went to a football game together and all that. He's a good dude, really good dude. But scope creep, and it happens in the work I'm doing here. Scope creep, and there's that word creep, right? Creep. I think of the word creep. I had a cousin who had sadly passed way too young. Oh, about 10 years ago, a little bit more than that, who was more like a brother to me, right? More like a brother to me as we were growing up and through our teen years and even into adulthood. And we kind of went back and forth being there for each other through our life. You know, it was one of those things. But when we were young, he frequently used the word creepy as an adjective to describe things. And I think, you know, back in the 70s, and I continually hearken back to the 70s for some reason so far, this far along into the group of releases I've done, I don't know, just is, you know, there's a kind of foundational stuff occurs back there. So anyway, he used to use a word. I remember like on TV, what was it, Scooby-Doo, the cartoon, he had Shaggy, who my cousin kind of reminded me of. My cousin kind of sort of was like the living iteration of Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, but he used that word creepy also, right? So, but I think about my cousin and even Shaggy from Scooby-Doo and things in the 70s. It was more of a common word back then. And, creepy. I'm going to look it up. I'll give you a dictionary definition for that also, right? Creep. Well, just creep. I'll do creep. Scope creep, right? Definition one, to move with the body close to the ground, as on hands and knees, right? That's a verb type of usage, right? Intransitive verb. You move with the body close to the ground on your hands and knees. And then you can extrapolate from that the idea of moving very stealthily, very cautiously, right? Or slowly. The way it's used in project management, you know, the scope creep, the idea is like growing or spreading along a surface. you know, and clinging and just spreading, you know, it's that idea there's a creep in that element. But as a noun, right, as a noun, creep is in a slang usage as a noun, an annoyingly unpleasant, unsettling, or repulsive person, right? Right. And that's it. That's what I'm going to go with. Okay. And you know, so you can look at scope creep in kind of two different ways, depending on whether you're going verb or noun, right? A scope creep as a verb is kind of like going off into an unplanned direction and accruing more expense and et cetera and so forth, as I've already described. And then scope creep as a noun is somebody within the scope who is this kind of repugnant, repulsive, undesirable person. Now, there's kind of a connection between the two, I would say. You know, creep as a noun, a creep as a verb, you know, that motion of just kind of growing slowly in an undesired direction, unplanned, unwanted direction, is what creeping is, and it's also what a creep does, right? You could think like a creep would be like a peeping Tom, right? The guy who slinks down the alley real quiet through the dark, climbs up on something and looks into the window to see whatever it is the hell he's looking for, right? Peeping Tom. That's a creep. But, you know, it's it can be like a really fine line. You know, the things that we do in this life and the people that we do these things with, we can go from something pleasant to unpleasant in a whim of somebody else. Let me give you an example of what I'm trying to say. It's think about being younger or whatever. Think about just being like out on the dating scene, right? You're out to meet people, you know, your life is unsettled, you're looking for a partner, you're looking for whatever you're looking for in romance, right? You go out dating and you meet somebody and you converse and you like that person, you will begin to behave in a certain way, right, with regards to that person. You'll want to get to know them better. You'll want to be more involved with their life, right? Now, if that person is receptive to you and wants the same, that's all good, right? That's all good. It's like you bring it on. But if they're not receptive to you, that very same behavior with your very same desires will make you be a creep, right? Ain't that fucked up? It really just depends on the scenario, whether or not you're a creep. Now, you could take it to extreme. Of course, like, people are generally not going to desire you slinking down their alley and climbing up into your window, you know. But then on the other hand, who knows? Maybe some people like that sort of thing. But generally, you know, you do what you do, and if people are receptive to it, it's okay. If they're not receptive to it, then all of a sudden you're some kind of fucking creep, some kind of weirdo, right? And we'll get there. We'll get there. You know, there's a couple songs that come to my mind. They're actually titled Creep, and they actually came out around the same time, not too far off from each other. One of them is from the Stone Temple Pilots, right? Stone Temple Pilots are a band, you read about it. They formed up in San Diego in the 80s, and they became wildly famous during the grunge era. And I was a fan of Stone Temple Pilots. You know, I don't mind that at all. I have songs on my phone. I download and spend the money on them. I've gone to see them. You know, we'll get into that. But they had a song named Creep, and in the lyrics, it only really mentions about creep once. And I got to tell you, the lyrics in Stone Temple Pilots are kind of disjointed, and I don't know. I never seem to really relate to them. And this song is kind of like that. It's like you really got to know what the hell the guy's talking about, and I never seem to. That's my problem, I guess. But the line in the song that actually mentions the word in the title, creep, what does he say? I think I'm kind of neat, but then you tell me I'm a creep or something like that, right? And that's on the lines of what I'm saying. you are feeling like there's something there, and you what? You take the bold move to make that step forward, you know, to take the next step with a person, and then all of a sudden you find out that you're a creep, right? You're a creep. And, you know, that's the Stone Temple Pilots rendition of it. Like I tell you, I went and seen them. I got to see them kind of late in the game, you know? It's a band that I wanted to see back in the early, mid-90s. And it was a difficult band to see in a lot of ways because of the singer with all his heroin and drug problems. He was a very unpredictable and unreliable person, and now he's a very dead person, right? He's just one of those dead singers from the Generation X / grunge era, Scott Weiland by name. Excellent singer, really. I mean, really talented person, but lots of issues. And, you know, the band would have tours, and they would schedule concerts, and this guy would miss them, blow them off, end up in jail, end up in rehab, tours would get canceled. A real headache. Real headache. And in 2013, they actually just finally shit canned him, and shortly after that he died, right? He was dead. And but in 2008, really, when I first got to Texas, one of the first concerts that I saw down here in the summer of 2008 was Stone Temple Pilots over in Grand Prairie, which is part of Post Arlen, right? The DFW Metroplex. Kind of plunked down smack in the middle of it all. Amphitheater, well, not an amphitheater, but just a theater over there. It used to be called like the Verizon Center or something like that. But, you know, those corporate sponsored things, they change names every so often according to the contracts and marketing and all that. I don't even know what the hell it's called now. It was kind of new at the time, and it was really a good venue to see a band like that at. It was like a small arena. It was arena, but really like on the small side. And the performance, you know, the Scott Weiland showed up, he wasn't all fucked up, everything went according to plans, and it was really a good concert, right? Really good concert. I enjoyed it very much. Then now the other song that comes to mind, again, called Creep, from around the same time period, right? Early 90s, neck grunge era, was a Radiohead version of it, right? Radiohead, the band from England, on their first album called Pablo Honey, which was mildly successful, but all of its success was attributed to the one song, Creep, right? Creep became anthemic for grunge era people, right? It was like one of the grunge anthems. If there was like 2, 3, 4, 5 songs that could be regarded as anthems from the grunge era, Creep was definitely one of them. The Radiohead version of them, of Creep. And it was not the same song that the Stone Temple Pilots did. It was a completely different song, right? Absolutely from somewhere else, about something else, and but an anthem nonetheless, and wildly popular, you know, around the time it came out, and shortly thereafter it became anthemic. And you know, it wasn't just for like grunge people like walking around with flannels and Doc Martens. You know, when I talk about grunge era, I'm really talking about the time span. And you can break it down however you really want to. In my mind, I refer to it as like 90 to 95, right? It's probably specifically a little tighter than that, but in that same general area, you know, you get a little bleed over. People coming on late to the scene. Like me, I was kind of a late comer to it, as it was, you know. But anyway, without going off on that tangent, which I was just invited to do, you know, something whispered in my head, go there, and I'm not going there. in those days, now me personally, I'm going to get a little bit personal here, because I'll do that every once in a while. Part of this is about me, and expressing, you know, what I'm expressing is coming from a certain place, and there's a certain background to it all. And I had some issues, you know, I had some issues growing up, and I got into resolving them. You know, part of my issues was alcohol and drugs, and in 1988, I came to terms with that and put it down, and I was in and out of 12-step groups in order to accomplish that, right? And during a period where I was back in with it, when I say in and out, doesn't mean I went out partying again. I get sick and tired of being in a 12-step group. I'll just be frank with you again. So I would just have my moments where, you know, I do it a lot for a year or two or three, and then I kind of back out of it for a year or two or three, and then come back to it. I'm in the out period now, and I've been for a few years, and I'm good. You know, I'm good. It's just, I've always been good. It doesn't matter. But back then I was in, right? And I was just coming back in from an out period, pretty extensive one at that time, because, you know, 1994 is what I'm thinking. You're looking at, you know, I'm 5-6 years clean and sober, and I'm just getting done not going to AA meetings for like a year and a half, you know? That's like a large percentage of the time I was sober at that point, you know? Would probably be more like equivocal now, like if I just disappeared for 10 years, right? But yeah, it was like a year and a half, and I had just come back into it, and there was kind of like a new scene, you know. A lot of faces stay the same, but a lot of shit changes very quickly in those 12-step groups. And at the time, you know, at the heart of the matter, we had this kind of large group of people in a home group that we had, that I was in. It still goes, you know, somebody's in it still, but that I was involved with back then. And on Friday, we met on Friday nights, and then after we met, we would go over to this couple's house, who I was very close to, right? In fact, I was sponsoring the male portion of that couple, and you know, the female was the hostess, and we would have a good time over there. A lot of people would just show up and hang out, and we'd go all night long. It was just like that, you know. 12-step crowd, you know, 12-step recovery people, crowds are a little different, you know, a little different. A lot of us, especially early on, are kind of untethered, right? We have fucked up a lot of things, and we're alone in the world. We've driven people away from us. We've destroyed a lot of situations. You know, you lose jobs, you create divorce, your family disowns you. This is, you know, par for the course when you're a drug addict, and par for the course when you're an alcoholic. And then, you know, whatever other problems people come, you know, it creates other emotional and psychological problems as well. And sometimes people have emotional, psychological problems to begin with that trigger off reacting to life with alcohol and drugs. And I don't mean to get into all this shit, right? You know, in fact, you know, when it comes to alcohol, it's usually an outward symptom of an inward problem, right? We're problem people. But the problems are really hot when you're new at recovery. You're new at recovery. Everything is just kind of fucking hot. All the problems are existing. You have to, you know, maybe you had a drunk driving ticket. You lost your license. You know, now you're walking around or busing it or bicycling it everywhere. You got to go hitching rides. And you're, you know, 5 years out from getting your license back. So you got to live that way and not be normal. Right, and that's an example. These are a couple of examples of just how abnormal this particular subsection of society can be. That's just a little taste of it now. So we go back into this kind of after-meeting party that goes on all night. You know, it's a lot of drinking, coffee, playing cards and video games and watching boxing. It was like the Mike Tyson era, right? You'd sit there, watch Mike Tyson pummel the shit out of somebody, and then maybe Evander Holyfield was coming along around then. It was kind of constant. You know, the guy who I was sponsoring, he loved the fights, and he would get the pay-per-views all the time. So that was a part of it. And, you know, we would jam in this little apartment of shit. 15, 20, 25 people, maybe more. And we were all different, you know? We were all different. You'd have some people who were like 15, 16 years old in that mix. And then you'd have people who were like 70. And then you'd have everything in between. And we'd all be hanging out. We had the common bond of our addiction problems and the recovery that goes along with it subsequently. But after that, we were all kinds of different. Heterosexuals, homosexuals, trisexuals, bisexuals, you know, in terms of all that. And, you know, people who are like, well, into grunge, people who are hip hop, people who, you know, whatever. It just everything across the boards. And I can remember more than one occasion, you know, you have some kind of a radio playing in the background, right? Grunge area we had up in the New York City metropolitan area. What was it? APP, Q103. Stations just only played grunge music, right? That's all they played was grunge era music. And we loved it. We had that playing in the back. And then, you know, you're sitting there playing Spades. And then all of a sudden, Radiohead Creep comes on, right? And then everybody's like foot starts tapping and the finger starts tapping on the table and the head starts swaying back and forth. You know, and like a couple of verses into the song, you look around and everybody, whatever age they were, whatever their sexual preoccupation may be, whatever style, whatever shit they're into, they're all singing along with this very simple Radiohead song, right? When I say it was anthemic, this is what I mean. It was something that touched everybody. I'm a creep. I'm a weirdo. What the hell am I doing here? I don't belong here, right? Those are lyrics in that song. And there's some level, I think, in all of us that is triggered by that, but especially in a room full of recovering AA and NA people with all the problems that come with all that, right? And it was sort of kind of like a real quiet, subtly magical thing to observe. And that song's got some fucking wheels to it, right? And if it's cross-sectional in that regard, it's going to be cross-generational too. I promise you, if some kid just hears it right now, 30 years later for the first time, being all like 14 years old, they're going to relate to it too. You know, it was just that kind of song. It was the right thing. You know, some songs are truly timeless. A lot of the songs that come out of, you know, my father used to call that narcotic rock and roll, right? Are not really. They're nostalgic for a lot of us old people looking back. That's what we grew up with. But the timelessness of them all, no, it's not really there. A lot of them are really relative to that moment in time. We like the nostalgia of it because we hear that it brings us back to that moment. Because back there was always a better place. You know, it always seems in retrospect it was better back then. But I'll tell you what, here's a little tangent. I've been doing a lot of soul search, a lot of thinking, a lot of hearkening back to those years and really going through what I was going through. And no, it was really not that great. I had a really rough time, like say through junior high and shit like that. You know, I like to think otherwise, but the results beg to differ. I went into it one kind of person and I came out of it completely fucking disrupted and destroyed, you know? And then it only got worse. I became a monster into high school. It's fucked up, you know? Nostalgia is a really fucked up thing. But most songs that go back like that, they trigger the nostalgia in us older people. But every once in a while, there's one. It's just cross-generational. Timeless, right? That's what I like about country music. And here's another little side jag. You know, country music, it's usually written by adults and for adults. And it may be simple, but you know what? In that simplicity, a lot of times you get timelessness with it. It's a story that gets told over and over and over again by a lot of people in different times, in different places, right? And it's very relatable. And, you know, here's where I'm going to kind of go. The idea of being relatable, right? Creep by Radiohead, a grunge anthem, for sure. For sure. And I think I expressed that kind of clearly, right? as a grunge anthem in its simplicity and its timelessness, the irony of it is the singer, and probably the guy who wrote it, Tom York of Radiohead, always hated the song and really hated the reception to it, right? I don't know the guy personally, but the idea, the gist I'm kind of carrying in me from things that I've read and interviews that I've seen and shit, a long time ago, right? And forgive me if I'm wrong, and I don't mean to bastardize a person's intent or anything like that, but the way I recall it is basically you got a guy who views himself in a very serious manner as a very serious artist who does not want to be associated with what he regards as his simplest and most unsophisticated song. It's ironic in his life that that kind of song, for which he has the lowest regard, becomes the song that makes the band and provides his fame and fortune going forward, right? He had a resentment towards that whole thing and a shame about it, it seemed. Like a whole shame that he actually released a song like that that took with the world the way it did. And it... kind of, how do you say, I'm trying to think of, it kind of trapped them in a corner, you know. It's the regard for which people in general will have, unless you're really a Radiohead fan. Like, I became a real Radiohead fan, not initially, because at that time there were so many other bands to listen to, and Pablo Honey was not their greatest effort. It was their first time out the gate, you know. And there were so many other things to be listening to back then that I found to be a lot better at that time. But as Radiohead continued on, they were releasing albums unbeknownst to me that I didn't really pick up on until like 2004. And that happened again with another similar 12-step recovery situation, right? Again, you go to a meeting and then you go hang out at some apartment, right? And stay up all night. This time the apartment was mine. I was like the old dude, and I had all these kind of like college age and maybe just shortly out of college age, people in their 20s basically, late teens and into their 20s, hanging around at my apartment. I had subbed out a bedroom to a guy, one of these people, who was in need, right? He's desperate for a place to live. And I had a spare bedroom. I had a two-bedroom apartment. Me just living in there. It's like, all right, I cut him a break. You know, he knocked some money off of my monthly rent and everything like that. And with that came his whole troop of people, right? And I didn't have a problem with it because we had a lot of fun, right? We had a lot of fun. Him and I got along good, and his friends were all right. And we had a lot of good times for 5 or 6 months. And it started to get weird after that, but all of these young people, right? And they, I would guess they would be like late Generation X types at that time. Surely, absolutely, right? Like I got my early Generation X. They were like late Generation X. And they were all grunge era people. They were like going to junior high and high school during the grunge era. I was already like an adult, you know, married, divorced, all that shit, but I was still in their generation, right? Anyway, so these were like the younger part of Generation X. So I had a bolstering of my Generation X-ness come into my life through these younger people for this stretch. And what they brought with it was Radiohead. I would be sitting around in my living room, and they'd have like a chessboard out on the table, and they'd be playing video games on the TV, and they would be fucking with my guitars. And you know, one guy, he carried around this case that had like 17,000 fucking CDs in it, right? And that's what he did. Everywhere he went, he just had this big sack of CDs with him, all kinds of music from all kinds of places, and it was his pride and joy. And they would go through that and they would pull out what they wanted to hear. And there was always a Radiohead thing in there. And a lot of it at that time, what really grabbed me was OK Computer, right? The album OK Computer, 95, 96. And boy, was that great. It is a great album, top to bottom. And really, according to me, from that point all the way through till, I guess, when the hell would it have been? They made an album that I have no regard for called King of Limbs in 2011, right? Maybe I'll get into that later. But everything short of that, prior to that, and going back to OK Computer, was just incredible. There was not a bad move along the whole way. They were all really, really good albums to me, and I listened to them all the time. But I didn't start doing that until about 04, right? I never really got on board with the whole Radiohead thing, if there is a whole Radiohead thing. I was never a fan. I knew the song Creep from the radio. It affected me like it affected everybody else, but I didn't get on board with Radiohead until 2004 when I first heard OK Computer. Paranoid Android is another big song of theirs. On that album, a notable song to me, a song that was really different and unique at that time, and I can relate it to some of the music I've made, right? Maybe I copied it. I didn't mean to, but maybe there's a song that uses a digital voice, right? Like, in fact, here, when I do post-Arlen Monologics and I go into post-production, I have sequences of introductory material and outroductory material, right? I have these voices that come in, and they're text-to-speech voices. I type something, I populate a field, I hit a button, and that text is transferred into digital speech. And you can choose all kinds of male, female characters, different languages, different accents within your language selection. And so I use that even in this production. But there's a couple of songs I made really early on. And doubtlessly I had Radiohead influence because I was still listening to Radiohead a lot at that time. Back to like 2009 when I started recording digital music, like into the computer, using Ableton as an interface, as a composition software application through musical instrument digital interface MIDI, as I do now, right? The same thing. I was doing it back then. I can't sing, and I don't think I had a microphone to sing in if I could back then. I wanted to get some words, some old lyrics I made, you know, from when I used to write lyrics and poems and stuff, and get them into the sound, this music somehow. And I figured out how to do this, right? And the idea had to come from Radiohead and a song called Fitter, Happier. Fitter, Happier. And I gotta tell you, man, Fitter, Happier is probably what a lot of people would regard as a flyover type of song. When you go through OK Computer, it's like a low light. It's kind of something just in the middle there. Like you can get up and walk away and go to the refrigerator, come back to it like a fucking TV advertisement or something. But it draws, it creates this mood, this picture, right? And I should just turn it on and listen to it before I even talk about it. But try to get in the mood of it all, but it's kind of a downer, you know, depending on the person that you are. To me, it's a fucking downer. But it's really a great expression of, you know, contemporary humanity. And that's what this Monologics is really about, right? Expressing contemporary humanity. Now, even though we're going back 28 years or so, this still fits. I mean, what this is kind of a day in the life and the thoughts that go through a person's mind, related to being fitter and happier. Okay? So let's just kind of like take it from there. If your concern is to be fitter, that means you are unfit, right? And if the rest of your concern is to be happier, that means you are unhappy. So you're unfit, unhappy. You're unhealthy. You're weak. You're miserable. And now you've got this kind of like line of thinking, this kind of self-talk that goes through your mind to kind of like draw parameters for yourself to live within, and some kind of coaxing and rules to encourage you on. That you, what you can eat to eat better, what kind of medications you should and shouldn't take. And it's just like this kind of just a line of self-talk through a digital voice, right? And there's just some kind of creepy, distant, ethereal music all behind it without rhythm, just ghostly, you know? And what a mood that it sets, and really, what does it express about modern living, right? Modern living. Well, you know, I really should just take this a step further. I really should. Time does not permit, but let's see if I can't get all the lyrics to it out here. It's not long. Give me a moment. Bear with me. Radiohead, fitter, happier. Lyrics. Return. Here we go. Come on, bring it up. We'll go with this. Now, a lot of times, the lyrics on these websites aren't exactly right. Well, let's just go through this, okay? Here we go. Fitter, happier, more productive, comfortable, not drinking too much, regular exercise at the gym 3 days a week, getting on better with your associate employee contemporaries, at ease, eating well, no more microwave dinners and saturated fats, a patient better driver, a safer car, baby smiling in back seat, sleeping well, no bad dreams, no paranoia, and it goes on like that. It is a lot longer in terms of words than I anticipated. But that's the idea. You know, it's these parameters, it's like a set of ethics to try to abide by to lift you up and make you something you're failing to be, you know? And it describes information age living in the very real doldrums that it is, you know? It's a fantastic song. Now, I guess some people in the world wouldn't regard that as a song, but I do. But it really expresses the drudgery of life in this information age, which has been extensive, right? We cracked into the information age, I don't know, mostly with the onset of the internet, you know. But you could probably bring it back to 1990. You might say, along with the grunge era came the information age, or vice versa. You could probably take it back to that if you really wanted to. But the ability for us all to communicate constantly throughout the day really come with the internet. So you're really getting into like 95, right? 95, 96. Not to say that that's when the internet started. That's when people started collectively getting on board with it. It became a popular and cultural phenomenon that it goes on to this day, right? It goes on to this day. So, the drudgery of life in the information age. And I listened to that, like I told you, I picked that up in 2004. And 2005, I made my move out of Jersey and I went down south, right? That job again, the scope creep guy, right? That project ended and I ended up picking up work down at the headquarters in Fulton County, Georgia, Alpharetta. And I went into a really deep depression during that period of time, right? I did not leave Jersey in the best of states, but I wasn't that bad. But once I got down south and got into my new routine of living down there, the wheels just started coming off, you know? And without getting into too morose of the detail of it all, I was in a depression. I was in an absolute deep down depression, and it was problematic, right? It was problematic. It wasn't just, I would here and there kind of feel a little melancholy. No, I was like down, dark, permanently, consistently, 24/7, and trying to hold my shit together because I had a house with a mortgage and a job, and, you know, all my responsibilities, and nobody there to help me. Everything was on my shoulders to do, and I couldn't even carry my own fucking head, let alone responsibility, right? So I was very depressed in that era. And what was I listening to? I was listening to Radiohead. And I remember like going out on a loading dock smoking. I was just going through everything and just trying to figure out. It's like, you know, here I am. And you hear the phrase battling depression, right? Battling depression. Here I am battling depression. It's like, what? That's probably half the fucking problem right there, right? Because, you know, I've noticed that I was getting this real sensitivity to anything stressful. Like, as soon as stress entered into my scope, okay, there's that word again, right? Scope. As soon as stress came into my scope, into my orbit, I kind of responded with depression. That just, something was really off inside of me, but I was still making that recognition, right? That I was being triggered deeper into depression by any kind of stress that would come along. I had no more room for no more stress, I guess. And the idea came to me smoking a cigarette out on that loading dock that day. It's like, you know what? Let's not fight no more. Let's not battle depression. Let's just get along with it like we're old friends. Because, you know, in my stupid life, that's exactly the truth. I was, 37, 38 maybe, right? Mid to late 30s. And I had entered into depression around the age of 13 originally. So I was kind of an old hat at it, right? Me and depression, we went back. And it's like, yeah, why fight? Why fight? Let's just be friends with it. And I got this notion to just kind of romanticize it, to live in the darkness of it all. You know, it's like living in a spiritual cemetery inside of my skull and just being pleased with that, you know? That's all. Just accepting the fact and going with it, rolling with it. And, you know, the darkness just got darker and darker and darker. And what am I listening to? Radiohead. So now it's like Radiohead, I listen to it, but it's kind of few and far between. I don't ruminate on it. Again, it's very ethereal music. And it sets these kind of moods. And it triggers me a little bit, right? And I regard Radiohead as music to cut your wrists to, right? And maybe that sounds funny, maybe it don't. Because it is funny and it ain't at the same time. You just take it the way you take it. But, you know, particularly depressing is that Fit or Happier song, right? Like Creep is the anthem of the grunge era, Generation X. Well, I look at Fit or Happier as kind of the anthem of this idea of the new world order and the slavery that goes with it, right? Really, to me, when I hear that song, I get a snapshot of somebody who's like trapped in an apartment, say like 75 years from now, like out in the late 21st century. The whole world has been globalized. Nobody owns anything anymore. You can't move freely, you know? You're confined to like your 15-mile radius. There's nowhere to go out to. Everything is done within the confines of your apartment at the push of a button, right? And I say apartment, like you don't have a yard. You don't get a dog, you know? You do your work at the keyboard or whatever more modern rendition of that is. Some kind of computer you do your work at. You never meet your coworkers, you know. You interface with people through digital means, whatever they may be, that far out into the future. And all you got is like this self-talk. Now, you know, I use that phrase self-talk when I'm describing fit or happier, but you know, that's a digital voice. That could also very easily be the voice coming through a computer talking to you while you're in that apartment life in the future, instructing you how to just keep on perpetuating further ahead in the drudgery of your slavery, you know? And you unknowingly are in a slavery because you were born into it. You know, what we're born into and what we grow up with is very normal to us, right? You know what I mean? I'll give you an example, right? Divorce. I was born and I had a set of grandparents that were divorced. And I never knew it. And I never understood it. I never thought about it. I never questioned it. They were divorced before I was born. And I was born into a situation where grandma and grandpa were never in the same place. And when you went to see grandpa, grandma was never around. Not to anybody, it's divorce, and that's the way it goes. To somebody who don't know, it's like, well, they're grandparents. They should be together. That doesn't make sense. To me as a kid, it just wasn't a thought. It was just automatically normal. And that's the point I'm trying to make here. It's just automatically normal. However fucked up it may be, I'm oblivious to the fucked upness about it. And I think this is what's going to happen in time with people. We're going to be trapped basically in these cages and not know that we're even trapped. Completely dependent, you know? Literally plugged into the fucking wall for our nutrients. That kind of life. And yeah, that's what I see. It's like the anthem of the NWO slavery, the New World Order that's to come. You know, and the darkness and the depression that's related to me and listening to Radiohead as time goes forward, right? There's a story where I came to Jesus finally, right? Which began to turn this shit around. It didn't happen immediately. It started the wheels turning in a different direction. Repentance and all that, right? That's literally what repentance means. But just because you turn a different direction doesn't mean you are not still right next to the fucking heart of the problem. The wheels got to turn a while. You got to get away from it, right? So then this is where I was at. I had just like come to faith, or I was in the process of coming to faith. And I was spending my time at a friend's house down in, over in Nashville. It was down from New Jersey, over from here, in Nashville, Tennessee, trying to put my life back together, following all of this, you know, the mounting depression that I had carried into Georgia, right? They kept on going. It was a couple of years of this shit. And I was spending my time online looking for jobs, you know, sending out resumes, setting up interviews, interviewing very poorly because I was in a very poor condition and I couldn't get a job. You look at me, I don't want this guy hanging around, right? And I had a hard time there with that. I couldn't really get my shit going, so I didn't really stick around, and I moved on. But while I was there, like I said, I was spending my time on a porch, a deck on the back, a screened-in deck, and I was plugged in with my laptop on the job hunt. And when I was done doing the job hunt stuff, I'm looking into Christianity, trying to understand that as I was making the turn towards faith, like I just described, and yeah, just trying to connect with people. I was doing like online AA meetings, and while I'm doing all this, I'm depressed out of my mind, right? I'm gonzo. I'm just smoking cigarettes and fucking around on the computer all day long. And this praying mantis just kind of appears. A praying mantis, right? A little praying mantis on the table where I have myself set up, a coffee cup, an ashtray, the laptop computer. This thing just lands on the table. And for how long was it? 3-4 weeks, the thing just stayed there with me, right? And it would look at me, and it would turn its head, and it had that real human, yet slightly alien look to it, well, very alien look to it, right? A little triangular head, and it was like my buddy when I was at the loneliest of times. It was a praying mantis, and I swear, this was it, you know? One day, it just dried up and died, and I was actually sad. You know, I had an affinity for this creature. What a low place in my life. And it was during that time that Radiohead came out with an album called In Rainbows, right? And I don't know what the gist of it all is. But what I do know, it was new when I was hoping for something new. And they were giving it out at whatever price you wanted to buy. You could download it digitally at any price you wanted. I gave them $10, you know? And had no idea what I was getting for it. Turned out to be a very, very good album, right? And it ended up turning out that, you know, when I left Nashville, I went to here, to Post Arlen, Texas, right? And I got to see Radiohead on their In Rainbows tour down Fair Park, where the Cotton Bowl is, right? South, southeast side of Dallas, right outside of downtown over there, kind of under Deep Ellum. Yeah, Fair Park, it was 2008. I saw them there. Man, what a good show that was. You know, they played everything, you know, all of In Rainbows and then like everything all the way back. Not Creep. They won't play Creep because Tom York hates it, but really excellent set list. I had a ball, you know. It wasn't like a great time. I wasn't with great company, you know, one of my exes who I don't like. But the show, the music, the songs, it was right on. But, you know, one of my more favorite concert experiences I had. But, you know, down the road, the next album, was it the next album that came out? King of Limbs, I mentioned it earlier, 2011. They came out with that, and it was kind of like very different for Radiohead, and I didn't like it. Right? I didn't like it, and I still went to go see them. It was at the American Airlines Center downtown in Dallas. For that tour again, 2011, and you know, they played the whole thing just like, you know, In Rainbows, on that tour they played that whole thing. They played the whole King of Limbs, and it was horrible. It's music I don't like. It's like somebody who likes techno, but that's not his thing. That's kind of like Tom York, right? His thing is his thing, and it's all of that very ethereal, surreal, emotional, however you describe Radiohead up to that point, that's his thing. But what he likes to listen to, he wants to try to incorporate into what he's good at, and he's not that good at it. It's not his thing. And to me, that's what King of Limbs was. It was an album of him trying to be somebody he's not. And I could be wrong about that, but it just, that's how it seemed to me. It didn't jive with me. And what was worse is when I went to go see it live, the sound system didn't handle it very well. You know how an arena concert can be really bassy, right? They'll have the big bass amps high up in the arena, and it'll drown out a lot of shit if you're sitting in a corner or something. That's how it was. Everything was just like this low bass that was drowning out everything and kind of rumbling, and you had no real feel for it. Half the show was shit that I already knew I didn't like. And then the rest of it just didn't sound. And I was just in a bad mood. You know, again, with the same bad company. And it did not go over well with me. And I was done. I quit on Radiohead. I was just done. I'm not spending money on any more of this shit. And I'm not listening to it anymore. Tired of listening to music that makes me want to cut my wrists. And, you know, all that. So I gave up on it. And I didn't listen to it at all for really quite a long time. Only in the past like 3-4 years, I started like slowly downloading a couple of songs because they're old enough to be very nostalgic now. They bring me back to a place. The place is a dark place, but I don't live in that dark place anymore. Here's the good side of the story. You know, I got out of that. I continued that turn on faith, that repentance, and I continued traveling in that direction away from all the problems of my existence into the solutions, which is my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And I'm proud and bold to say it, you know. It's changed me for the better, and I'm in a good place, and I've been in a good place for a good long time as a result of it. And I could fearlessly go back to a nostalgic, bad place in my life. And what do I gain by that? I can gauge the positive progress by remembering exactly where it is I came from, right? That's important. That's important because sometimes, you know, life is very gradual. We don't really know how well we're doing a lot of times. This is a way for me, like I said, to gauge it. Now, since 2011, since I quit on Radiohead, I really have had no idea what they've been up to, right? Did they make 5-6 albums? Did they make any albums? What have they done? Did they break up? Did they die? I have no idea. Completely disconnected from all of that, right? So I went and looked, right? I went and looked a couple days ago. And they made one album in 2016, which happened to be quite popular and very highly regarded. And I had never heard of it. And of course, I've never heard it. Just a little while ago, I just started to kind of spin my way through it a little bit. I touched on about half of the songs just to get a feel for the album. And you know what? I kind of like what I heard there, you know? I kind of like what I heard. It was not King of Limbs, right? There was sort of a hearkening back to the way Radiohead had been. It was very ethereal, but it seemed to me like there is some kind of potentially maybe symphonic orchestration, some orchestra music embedded into it somehow. Not positive about that, but I kind of got that feel. That could be something done with keyboards, obviously, but I don't think so. I think something is going on there. A little different. But the feel of the music is the same. It's a very slow pace. You know, I remember reading about this. Like, there was a lot of music I was listening to back in those times. A lot of music those young generation Xers were listening to back around 2004. They just seemed to have, like, this really slow, downtrodden tempo to them, right? Really, and you know, Radiohead had a lot of, just real slow, not picking, you know, a good tempo song. You know, you got some pace to it, but you could slow that down to where it's just. The actual rhythm of the song just has all that space between it. That's what makes it ethereal, and then you can do a lot of shit inside of that space. But still the structure, just so spread apart, it's very slow. And there was a word for that kind of music that was perfect. Shoegazing, right? It was the shoegazing type of music, the shoegazing tempo and rhythm. These songs that were just like slowed down, like heroin addicts would just prop themselves up against the wall and just look down at their shoes while they're listening to shit like this, right? There's the shoegazing. Now this new... it's not new anymore. It's coming up on 7 years old. That's how far out of the loop I am, right? The last Radiohead album called Moonshaped Pool has a little bit of that kind of almost shoegazing pace to it, at least in so much as I toured through it. And I like that. I like that. I like making songs with a spread out rhythm that way, with all that space to do things in between. I'm going to go back and listen to it, you know. I'm going to check it out and kind of involve myself with a little bit. If I really do, in fact, like it, then I'll have just something else to slit my wrists to if the desire ever seems to overcome me again, which clearly I hope not.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Alan Monologics. Please understand that this project is meant to be part of a long-term archive as a series of snapshots reflecting a distant past. We are not seeking advertisers, but may at times accept private anonymous donations to help mitigate production costs. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Arlen Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at postarlen.com and at onsert.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@postarlen.com.